Hey, this is Meredith. There's been a lot written about the impact of the pandemic on mental health. Just a couple of months ago, the World Health Organization reported that anxiety and depression had increased by 25%. There have been some studies that have found as many as 30% of Americans are dealing just with depression. If you're in that number, it can feel really discouraging. When Katie Pessin first shared her story with us, one of the things that struck me was how encouraging it was to hear from someone who wasn't miraculously healed of depression, but has found God's faithfulness as she deals with it. I think this episode from the archives will give you hope. Page 59 of The Unfolding is the story of Katie Pessin.
There are all these feelings of, I am broken, I am not enough, there's something really just wrong with me. All that, man, just came back in a flash.
God's story has been unfolding
since the beginning of time.
He invites you to be a part of it.
Another page in the unfolding.
Hi, I'm Meredith Foster. If you or somebody you love has struggled with anxiety or depression, you know how crippling that can be. For Katie Pessin, depression was something she first grappled with as a middle schooler, and it's been a part of her life ever since. The struggle has taken her to the lowest moments of her life, but it's also been a place where God has revealed her need for Him and His love for her in a very powerful way.
So I grew up in the church. My parents were really active in my home church as a child. My mom sang on the worship team. My dad was an elder. We were your happy Christian family. When I was in junior high, though, they divorced. And I found out that it was because my dad had been having several affairs over the course of their marriage. So that in itself, of course, was kind of world-altering.
How did that affect you on a day-to-day basis?
You know, I think at the time I underestimated the effect that had on me. Because I had had friends whose parents had divorced when they were 3 and 4. And I thought, wow, like how lucky I am that my parents stayed married so long. And I did not understand what it did to my heart until much later in life. But what it did was force me as a kid to decide about my faith, because both of my parents stopped attending my church after that happened. And so as a 10, 11-year-old, I had to get rides to church if I wanted to go.
Wow. So that you had to be proactive and...
Right.
And did you?
Yeah. And so we had a family friend who took me and my brothers to church every single Sunday. So an older and a younger brother. And we went to church every Sunday with our friend Sue.
Did you go to the same church you'd grown up in?
Okay. Yep, kept going there. When I was in about 8th grade, my dad met somebody that he wanted to marry and decided to marry her. She was a really unhealthy person, unfortunately. She did a lot of really damaging things to me and my mom and my family. And so when we told my dad we weren't sure that we were okay with the idea of him marrying her, he basically said, well, if you don't like her, just don't come see me anymore.
He wanted you to choose.
Mm-hmm. And so as an 8th grader, I lost contact with my dad. Again, that was one of those things I did not understand the implications of. But now to think about a 13-year-old girl losing her dad at that age, it's just really life-altering, honestly. Mm-hmm. And so...
Did he move away or was he still geographically close?
Yeah, he was geographically close. We just didn't see each other anymore. And so I think for me, and my mom was going through a really hard time too, and so she wasn't a healthy parent. And so that was just really hard. And I internalized a lot of what was going on. I felt really bad myself and just had some unhealthy interactions with my mom, frankly, that left me really feeling pretty badly about myself. And so with all the other stuff going on with my parents being divorced and then feeling like I myself was bad. And some of it, honestly, was the church culture I grew up in. That was a lot of shame, a lot of just thinking I was bad. So my friends weren't allowed to come to my house anymore after my parents divorced. Things like that, where I got the message that I was bad. I was broken. There was something wrong with me.
And right during adolescence, mm-hmm. of all times.
Yeah. Which, man, talk about that time.
Hard enough as
yeah.
it is.
Mm-hmm. And so that was when I really first started to struggle with depression and thoughts of suicide. I'm really thankful. My mom got us, all of us, in counseling right away, which was really good as we were going through the divorce. And so I think I'm grateful that early on, I've never felt ashamed to go seek help when I need it. That's a habit that was instilled in me young, and I'm really grateful for that. And so even from 8th grade, I've been in counseling to help with my depression and on medication sometimes when it's been a particularly bad season. So that's kind of when that struggle started, was it when I was in junior high. And honestly, that's been a struggle my whole life. So there have been seasons where things were okay, and there have been seasons where things don't feel so okay. I think for me, at least early on, it seemed like my depression was more, it was brought on more by circumstances. So when something happened, I would kind of just free fall. I will say I'm very, very grateful that through all of that, there's never been a sense that God wasn't with me. I don't know why I didn't have the reaction of, well, if you people are going to judge me because my parents are divorced, yeah, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
I don't know why I didn't have the reaction, that reaction. I think it's only God's grace that somehow he kept drawing me to himself and to his church. And so through all of that, I was in church and I was learning how to have a relationship with God. And so I think my experience really my whole life has been that even though other people aren't constant, God is. He is always with me. I'm grateful that I had the opportunity to go on a mission trip as a sixth grader to Puerto Rico, and our youth leaders encouraged us to start journaling. And so in sixth grade, as all this was starting to unfold, I was given this tool of journaling.
Wow, that's powerful. In hindsight, I'm sure you see how powerful that could be.
Yeah. So I think I'm really, God's grace is so evident that when all this started, he kept me. And so I don't know that I've ever had a moment where I doubted that God was really with me. So I'm grateful that even in the beginnings of my struggle, God was there and providing me with help through counseling and medication and help through just spiritual disciplines of learning to talk to him, to journal, to read my Bible, things like that.
Mm-hmm. So you started that in sixth grade and that habit's carried on through high school. And
That's amazing. I will say and that's something again my mom did. I know she keeps journals too. And so I'm sure that there's something in there that's a mother-daughter thing maybe. But yeah, I think that's been how I have dealt with it. So, going through high school and college, depression took a lot of different forms. In college, sometimes it looked more like anxiety, and I would just feel really overwhelmed. I remember laying in my bed one morning. I didn't want to go to class, and my roommates were up and on their way to the same class because we're all music majors, and just laying in bed feeling so guilty and ashamed that I couldn't make myself get out of bed. And for me, that's often kind of what anxiety and depression looks like when it's just kind of existing on a low level, when there's not a big spike of some life event. It looks like just feeling overwhelmed by life, not being able then to do what I need to do, which means there's more I haven't done. And so I feel worse about it.
Right. And the overwhelm just gets more overwhelming.
Yeah. And so that's kind of my, I would say even to this day, that's kind of what just the ongoing anxiety and depression struggle looks like.
So you made your way through college despite the anxiety?
Yep. Yeah. I've graduated college. I started interning at my church during college and was really grateful to build a community there. And so I had a great boss who actually hired me after I graduated college, who told me, if you quit college, I'm not hiring you.
So you had motivation to get
through. About motivation to finish school. So yeah, I had some good motivation to finish school.
Let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. Along the way, did you share your struggle with depression with friends, or did other people know what was going on?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, along with, kind of this habit of going to ask for help and going to counseling, what that says right away is you don't need to be ashamed of being depressed. Because I think for so many people who struggle with depression, there's not just the depression, the anxiety, but then they feel this weight of shame about it too.
Right.
And I have absolutely struggled with that, but I'm really grateful that early on it was instilled in me that it's okay to get help when you need it.
That's good.
And again, part of the blessing of my immediate family sort of blowing up in junior high was that I was forced to find family elsewhere. And so the church became my family. And so always I have had people in my life from my church that were my people, that knew what was going on with me, extra parents when I was younger and good friends. And so that's been, a part of my journey the whole time is having community. I would say in college that continued, and that continues to this day. I have a small group that I'm a part of that several of us have been friends since college, and they have been there with me through everything. And they know what's going on, and I know I can just text them and say, I'm having a hard day. I need prayer. Yeah. And they get it. And they're not mad at me when I back out of doing something because I feel overwhelmed and can't
huge.
Do it.
That's huge. Having that kind of community makes all the difference. Mm-hmm. So you graduated, and so you started working for the church?
Yes. Yeah, so I graduated from college and started working in the worship ministry. I was the assistant to the worship minister for a while. And it was during that time after college that I started dating someone, and we got really serious. And we started talking about getting married, and that was very exciting. And I went to some conference and heard Francis Chan speak, and something he said prompted me to pray the prayer, God, I want you more than anything. If anything in my life, you know, would stop me from following you, just take it away. And so I came home from that conference feeling this high of, man, I love Jesus. I want to follow him. I want to do his will for my life. Really want him most. And that night he told me he didn't want to marry me, which was devastating in lots of ways.
Yes. And totally unexpected?
Totally unexpected, yeah. And so I think that brought up a lot of junk from my past. Having my dad, when I was a junior high girl, say that he'd rather be with his wife than me. And then, you know, having dated some in high school, I had a serious boyfriend in high school that cheated on me. There are all these feelings of, I am broken, I am not enough, there's something really just wrong with me. All that, man, just came back in a flash. And it was just a really overwhelming season. And we had one conversation after we broke up that left me even more devastated and just feeling so unloved. And I felt like nobody could really love me. And so that night I went to Walgreens.
You knew what you were doing?
I knew what I was doing, yeah. And then I went home. I told my roommate, take me to the hospital.
In desperation, Katie had purchased medicine and then ingested it, all of it. Part two of her story is coming up, but first, a word from our sponsor, Habib Habib, founder of H Squared Leadership Institute.
Hi, I'm Habib Habib, and this is your Inspirational Minute. John was a doctor. A couple of days before he died, John told people it was time to go to hospice care, where he died 3 days later. He had left a message. Please don't send flowers or be sad for me. I had a great life. Instead, give yourself the gift of having joy in life. Have a cookout. Fly a kite with your child. Forgive yourself for actions that happened in the past and move on. Live your life and love without fear of being hurt. Look for the good. Donate your time for a good cause. Look to make things a little better everywhere you go. Don't waste time. The number one complaint I saw in my medical practice was not disease, it was loneliness. Don't fall into the trap of thinking you have time to spare. Laugh more and worry less. If you want to remember me well, do a kind thing today. Smile for a stranger or be patient with someone struggling with their day. When I read that note, I thought, what great advice from the doctor. I don't know if he was a Christian or not, but his advice sounds like biblical advice. Don't waste your days. Instead, do good unto others and have the joy of the Lord. I'm Habib Habib. You can read more at HabibHabib.com.
And now, part two of Katie Pessin's story.
And so that night, I went to Walgreens.
You knew what you were doing?
I knew what I was doing, yeah. And then I went home. I told my roommate, take me to the hospital. You know, I was at the emergency room, and I don't know if he was the nurse or a doctor that was asking me, did you want to kill yourself? I didn't know how to answer that question. Because really, I didn't want to die. I just felt miserable. Part of my personality is that I'm really outgoing. I'm an extrovert. I like to make other people feel good. I like to make people smile. And so I think especially for like extroverted people who struggle with depression, there's this problem that sharing really truly our deepest sadness with others violates our sense of who we are. Because our whole sense of being is bringing joy to others. And so when we come into a space and we feel like our sadness is so much, so profound that we're going to really bring everybody else down, it makes it really hard to share that honestly. And so I had people in my life that knew I was struggling. I had even confided in some of them that I was thinking about suicide.
And you had mentioned that the first time you thought about suicide was high school. So it's something that you had thought about from time to time?
You know, it was junior high was the first time I really ever thought about suicide. And I took a handful of pills one night after a really bad fight with my mom. And again, God spared me there. I took something from the cabinet that wasn't going to hurt me. And I don't know that it was like a continual thought. It was just at my deepest, darkest moments. I don't go there very often, but in my really deep, dark moments, it feels like that's the only way out. I think looking back now, honestly, you know, as I was saying, the struggle with an extroverted personality is we feel bad to bring others down. I feel like as I look back now that really it was a cry for help. It was a, I am so hurt and so broken and so sad that, and I don't know how to ask for what I need. And I am so grateful that when that happened, God's people stepped up. So I was in the hospital for several days, and then I went to a mental health care facility for a few days after that. And man, the church was there. They were literally physically present with me the whole time I was in the hospital.
Wow.
So I had happened, the doctor of mine at the mental health care facility happened to be an attendee of our church. And so he, I think he lifted the visitor restrictions. So I had people with me just all the time. They came to see me. And that's not a happy place. Even now when I go visit people there, I don't feel good being in that place. And so that they came there to be with me at my lowest moment was just really beautiful. And it was what I needed. I needed, because I was feeling such tremendous pain, I needed a tremendous outpouring of love, but I didn't know how to ask for it. And so God's people did that. I mean, it was just beautiful. It was beautiful. I've been a part of unhealthy church situations where everybody knows what's going on, mostly so they can gossip about it and judge you. And that's not what happened here. Mm. People knew what happened. I was on staff at the church. They knew, but they knew so they could love me. I got cards. I got encouragement. Someone from the church picked me up from the hospital when I went home finally and took me right away to my first counseling appointment that she had helped me set up. My boss at the church came to see me and just expressed his love for me and, you know, told me, you are welcome back whenever you're ready, but you're not expected anytime. You just come back when you're ready. Yeah, man, it was beautiful. I wish every person who struggles like that would have that kind of experience around them.
Did you start to feel a light glimmering right away? Or how long, you know, with that rush of support, when did you start to feel a turn?
Yeah, you know, honestly, it was something I really kind of just wrestled with then, because honestly, like, there were a few days I don't remember, but as soon as I kind of woke up and really started to remember, I felt better. It was like this immediate just improvement in my heart. I felt so encouraged and so loved. And that was really hard for me to understand, honestly, because that has not been my general experience with depression. It doesn't just go away. And, you know, my general struggle hasn't. But so it was just, yeah, it was kind of strange for me to understand really what was happening. But as I look back again, it was God brought me exactly what I needed. He brought me all the love, all the encouragement, all the support that I really did need through all of that. I'm grateful that the community I have knows me and loves me enough to ask me how I'm really doing, that I have a boss that even now really understands that sometimes I just have a bad day. Actually, my husband knew me during all of this, and it was not very long after I got out of the hospital that he first told me that he, you know, kind of had feelings for me. And I remember just thinking, like, I was just in the mental hospital. Like, are you sure you want in on
you know
this?
What you're saying?
So even that, God really used that as a really healing thing. I thought, you know, I had to get myself together and be perfect before
You'd have to get fixed before
he'd bring the one. Because all the Christian dating books tell us, right? Just love Jesus more. Yeah. And then when you finally stop caring, he'll bring you your husband. That was not my experience.
So you had known your husband from before.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, he was actually the roommate of the guy that I was dating.
Oh my goodness.
It's a good story. Yeah, so yeah, they were roommates. And apparently they had a conversation about me before I started dating his roommate. They're driving home from church one day and one of them turned to the other and said, I think I'm starting to like Katie. And the other one said back, yeah, me too. And then the other, you know, my husband's roommate said, I call dibs. So I didn't know any of this until much later.
Oh my goodness.
So yeah, it was right after I got out of the hospital. It was a couple months later that he kind of told me he was liking me. And I honestly, at that point, I just kind of told him, look, I'm like ready to be married. I don't want to do the dating thing anymore. So if you want to marry me, let's talk about it. Otherwise, like, I'm good.
Oh my goodness. Now for some guys they would have like freaked out. Maybe. I'm going to guess he didn't though.
I mean, he would tell you that he was like, you know, okay, but he stuck around. So yeah. And so I was in the hospital in November. We started dating in January and got married in August.
Wow.
The next year. So it was kind of a whirlwind. It's not what I thought my story would look like. It's not what I would suggest to anybody else. But yeah, I mean, he loves me and he's seen me at my worst. And what more do I want than that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was funny. But yeah, I mean, I just think even so much of my struggle has been like just knowing that I am loved right where I am, and that that it's okay not to be okay sometimes. I think even the way God brought Jeremy, my husband, into my life was such a beautiful affirmation of that, that I don't have to be okay, that even at my very worst, I am loved. And I think that's been, you know, as I think about kind of my continual struggle with this anxiety and depression thing, that like, it doesn't ever just go away. And I struggle with that because I want to be self-sufficient. I want to be okay. I don't want to need help. I don't want to be weak. And by its very nature, anxiety and depression makes me weak. I think a lot of my learning has been learning how God sees me in all of that, that he loves me anyway, that his love for me is constant, that when he looks at me, he's not ashamed of me, but he's actually, as Zephaniah 3:17 says, he's delighting over me. He's singing over me. And now there's not really a before and after with the struggle with depression and anxiety, right? It's likely for me going to be a lifelong struggle. And so now I have to learn how to maintain in that and grow in my relationship with Christ in that. And for me, that looks like periodically going back for counseling. So sometimes when it's been a rough season, I need to go back again and have someone else help me climb out. Sometimes that means medication. For me, that's been really helpful. Again, in really hard seasons, being on some medication that helps kind of take off the edge of how low I feel has been really helpful for me. And honestly, I think sharing my story has been part of my healing, because I know how I felt. I felt so ashamed initially of my, just sometimes of my struggle. And I think it's really beautiful to see that when I share the deepest, darkest points of my life, the way God uses that, that he, when I've had opportunities, you know, at church, I'm a minister now. And so sometimes I'll talk on stage or I'll preach. And when I get to share that part of my story, it is so healing even still for my heart to hear someone else say how much they needed to hear. I think we way too often put on a mask and pretend like everything's fine. And the reality of living on this side of heaven is that it's just not going to be, there won't always be a happy ending, because we're not in the new heaven and the new earth yet. And so I think I'm really grateful for my struggle, because it's given me a way to help others climb out of their secrecy and their darkness. And I think too, honestly, my struggle with depression has helped me have a more real and vibrant relationship with the Lord.
Because you're aware of your need for him, or what do you think that is?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, as I said at the very beginning, I grew up in this church family that was like the perfect cookie cutter church family. And I think had that remained, I don't know how deep a relationship of God I would have sensed I needed. But when so early things are just kind of blown apart, yeah, I knew I needed God. And that's been my story, is I need him. I am broken and I am a sinner in need of God's grace. And man, it would be very hard for me to take for granted what Jesus did for me, because I am so constantly reminded of how broken I am and how in need of him I am. And I think if we had just kind of stayed that happy, everything's fine family, I'm not sure that my relationship with God would be what it is.
It reminds me of the verse in Corinthians when Paul was writing about how he had pleaded with God, with his thorn in his flesh, whatever that was. Mm-hmm. And he pleaded with God three times to take it away. And God's response is so interesting.
Yep.
And it's no, because my strength is made perfect in weakness.
Yep.
There's something in our weakness that's actually better.
Mm-hmm. Right, because it's so obvious. When I look at my life, it is so obvious that I did not get myself where I am today. It is so obvious. My parents got divorced. I struggle with depression. Twice I've tried to end my life. And I get to be a minister of the gospel of Jesus. It doesn't make any sense. I still, man, when I was a worship minister for a while and just leading worship, thinking, man, I get to stand on his stage. I get to proclaim his word. I get to lead his people in worship. There's no reason I should get to other than the grace of God. So yeah, depression and anxiety stink. They really suck. Mm-hmm. They're the worst. But man, I'm really grateful for my struggle, because it's made me, I think, who I am.
There are going to be people who hear this who have struggled with anxiety and depression and have never told anybody, mm-hmm. because of that shame factor. Mm-hmm. They don't have the kind of support like you have.
I think for someone who might be listening that has struggled with anxiety, depression, and for whatever reason hasn't sought help or told someone, I think one reason I've heard people not do anything about it is because they don't think it's that big a deal and they can handle it on their own. And And I would say first, probably you can. You can keep on living with a struggle with anxiety and depression and keep managing. But I don't know why you want to, because there is so much life on the other side of help. And I think it's sometimes hard to see right now that down the road, it's really going to be better. When I was in the hospital after trying to kill myself, I could not have imagined what I would feel being back in that same hospital holding my daughter. Right. And so you might not think it's a big deal. You might think you can handle it, but just kind of shuffling along with this heavy burden is doable, but it's not the best way to live. There is help available. And I know for some people, they're not sure who they can talk to. For them, I would say find somebody. If there's anybody you trust, if you can even Google search a counselor in your area. Another great program that I've been a part of is something called Celebrate Recovery. At my church, we have a Celebrate Recovery program, and that is a great place for anybody who struggles really with any kind of hurt, habit, or hangup to go and be honest about it. So I would say if you don't really know where to start, that's a great place to start.
If you're not familiar with Celebrate Recovery, it is a Christ-centered 12-step program that helps you deal with hurts, addictions, pain. It has helped thousands of people find freedom from the issues controlling their life. And you can find a group near you at CelebrateRecovery.com. Thanks so much to Katie for sharing her story with us. And thank you for listening. By the way, thanks to you, the Unfolding Podcast has been downloaded nearly 1.5 million times in more than 90 countries around the world. That's pretty awesome. If you enjoy the podcast, could I ask a favor? Would you leave a review? A 5-star review, or even better, a written review in Apple Podcasts helps other people find The Unfolding so that more can be encouraged by these God stories. Thanks to producer Jason Rackow, Elena Nallen, and Danielle Perez. Thanks to our wonderful sponsor, Habib Habib, the founder of H-Squared Leadership Institute. Find out how we can help unleash the full power of your leadership potential at HabibHabib.com. The Unfolding is produced by Northwestern Media. It's a ministry of the University of Northwestern St. Paul. We'll be back next week with another page in The Unfolding.